Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 113 of The Morning After. I am your host, one of your hosts, Jesse Kiefer.
And I'm that other host, Sari Kamen.
Sari Kamen, back from a long trip in Europe.
Thank you, guys.
Super happy to have you back in studio. Later in the show, we're going to talk with Sari about all of her traveling and eating.
What's that hashtag?
More eating. Hashtag fat foodie. Fantastic journey, the European edition. She was in France. She was in Spain.
Hashtag.
She was in Berlin. Ugh, I'm jealous.
Yeah, but now I'm back.
Come on.
Now I'm jealous of the fact that I was there. But I'm so happy to be back. Yeah. It's so good to see your faces and all of your faces, radio listeners, which I imagine are all gorgeous
and smiling and happy to hear us.
You all have that summer glow. You're so tan.
I actually once put together I'm so embarrassed to say this, a Facebook album of a trip to Vieques, which is an island off the coast of Puerto Rico, and I called it "Does My Voice Sound Tanner?"
It's so funny.
Oh man, well, I'm planning to go to the beach next Saturday, so we'll see next Sunday if my voice does sound tanner.
Okay.
Do you think tanner means lower?
Nope.
Does Tanner,
I think it means
higher?
Browner.
Well played. Well played.
I think I'm Tanner.
But also, on today's show, we actually have a guest who's not just my co-host. We're going to talk to Katrina Moore. She's the director of the In Progress documentary, Under the Mango Tree. It's the story of a Ghanaian doctor who's caring for his community through mental health care and food against all odds.
Connecting the dots.
A really, really amazing story. So we're going to hear from Katrina about how she got involved and how we can help support the film. But first, Aaron, my esteemed co-host who was on the show last episode.
Thank you for filling in, Aaron.
Oh, it was my pleasure, really. I'll never be let on again, but it was fun while
Well, you're here day. Now, so yes. Enjoy it.
Aaron is always has something to say. That's that's what I will say. What? Excuse me?
So
what?
You guys both had this meal together, and you've had slightly different reactions to it, both documented in different ways. Jesse, I hear you've written a poem.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron and I get to dine often together, but we don't really write our thoughts down about it.
You should do
together.
That more.
I think so. Yes, I've written a poem. I am not a poet.
No.
So bear with me. The name of the restaurant will not be revealed until the second edition of our documentation when Aaron speaks on it. But I will begin. Syrup-scented, sticky fingers pour my coffee. The carpeted dining floor keeps the sound of high children at a hum. Corporate chain Americanness in bright red, white, blue, and whipped cream. Why don't I feel like a patriot? Celebrate the good things. Eggs, sausage, pancakes, calorie counts. Bottomless bellies only add to my anxiety attack. Tight hairnets pull back a smile. Why am I the judge? It's not my business. This is family business. Neighborhood business. Big business. Never the optimist. I hope it goes out of business.
Ooh, what place is she talking about?
All right. My experience here.
In narrative form.
In narrative lyrical form. Just kidding. I had been... excuse me. Start again. Take two. I had been eyeing it for months. Large window panes, voluptuous booths, high ceilings, spacious floor plan, generous pots of piping hot coffee gently set on each and every table. Balthasar, you ask? Lafayette? Move over, eater. This was the IHOP on Flushing Avenue. Only 10 steps from our front door, it beckoned me daily with tempting kisses blown from syrup assortments and dollops of whipped cream. I wanted to shed the skin of foodie culture constraints and melt into one of those window front booths set 3 steps below street level, where your face is actually even with the sidewalk of Flushing Avenue. A metaphorical reminder of the level of dining that you are about to experience. Unsurprisingly, Jesse was nonplussed by my increasingly insistent demands to visit our downstairs neighbor. It just wasn't our usual jam. But as slow and steady wins the race, she eventually acquiesced to my demands on a drunken walk home late at night at 3 a.m. Don't judge me for this. I didn't take advantage of her impaired state. She brought it up. And when we woke up at 12:30 the next day, I rolled over and looked into her eyes and smiled and said, "You said we could go to IHOP today." Her expression didn't change and she didn't say a word. But 30 minutes later, we opened those glass doors and walked down the handicap ramp to request a booth for 2. When we opened the plastic laminated menus and saw the calorie counts, I'm not going to lie, we were a little freaked out. But we swallowed our fear and housed our eggs, hash browns, bacon, sausage, banana strawberry pancake mega plates, and washed them down with that ever-present thermos of coffee. As I paid the check, of course it was my treat, I leaned back into the booth and gazed around the room. You know, this is a place where the experience is always what you expect it to be. This is a place where kids can order any damn thing they please. This is a place of carpet sweepers and handrails. This is a place where servers carry 6 plates at a time and wear hairnets without shame. This is a place that hosts Sunday brunch with your grandparents or a Monday morning late breakfast when you and your mom decided to play hooky from school and work. This is a place that feels like home.
Erin's love letter to the IHOP.
Very sweet.
It took me months to convince her to go. Months.
I'm never going back.
And it sounds like it was everything.
It was everything I hoped it to be.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I ordered this stack of strawberry banana pancakes, and it came with a fucking, like, a pile of whipped cream that was as high as the pancakes themselves. It was insane.
Aww. Maybe not your jam, but definitely your jelly.
Yeah, exactly. But do you know the difference between jam and jelly?
Well, jam is something that ladies make.
I guess so.
And sell at farmers markets with a lot of love, and jelly is something like a processed food.
You also can't jelly a something into your something.
Oh!
Bleed!
You guys.
I mean, I used to get stoned and go to the IHOP when I was in college, and it seemed glorious, but going this time, it felt artificial, and I don't think I've really learned that much more about food. I mean, I guess I have learned a lot more about food since college.
Maybe it was the lighting.
You know, actually, I think some Edison bulbs and a dimmer would really fancy up that place.
It was in Brooklyn. An ironic IHOP would fly.
It was in Brooklyn. Sure.
No, yeah, seriously. A little Brooklynification? Is that a Brooklynify?
Absolutely.
Brooklynify that IHOP. Seriously, put like, you know, some Subway tile, maybe a couple bistro chairs.
You guys, Brooklyn,
some natural wine on the list, and it would be.
It's real, and I saw it all over Europe.
Oh, it's all over Paris. Yes. There's so many Brooklyn restaurants in Brooklyn style restaurants
called
in Paris.
Like Brooklyn food.
Right.
I mean, and
Brooklyn food.
Yeah.
Well, we definitely learned when we were in Paris that you don't tell them that you're from the U.S., you say you're from Bushwick. And they were like, Bushwick!
So I was like, oh, I'm from Brooklyn. They're like, oh, are you from Williamsburg?
I love that you were speaking to Pepe Le Pew.
Oh, yes. When I was in Paris, I spoke like Pepe Le Pew.
My darling. Well, my darling, let's take a break here.
Okay.
We're going to come back with Katrina Moore, the director of the documentary Under the Mango Tree.
You are listening to Samba by Super Boar Band. Hi, I'm Jessie Kiefer, host of The Morning After. This summer, Heritage Radio Network is turning cinco. That's five for you non-Spanish speakers. Since our launch in 2009, we've continued to bring you food, culture, and content like nobody else, and we need your help. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a passionate, grassroots, action-oriented nonprofit organization. That means we depend on the support from listeners like you to keep us alive. If you love what you hear on Heritage Radio Network, visit our website and become a member today. Thanks for listening, and thanks so much for your support.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hey, what's up? This is John Norris, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
Hey, John Norris.
Chuck Norris.
Okay. We're back. We're listening to The Morning After on HeritageRadioNetwork.org, and I believe that I have my good friend Katrina Moore on the line. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, my gosh. You sound fantastic.
Hey, Katrina.
Hi.
Hi. So you're on a beach, is that right? You're near a beach? You're swimming in a beach?
Yeah, I'm on vacation at the beach in North Carolina right now.
Well, that sounds cool.
Is it Hilton Head?
No, I'm on Atlantic Beach. It's a much smaller kind of residential beach near the Outer Banks.
Oh, I've been to the Outer Banks. Great. Check out the seafood buffet.
Yeah, seriously, have fun.
Yeah. But before you go do that, you're here on the line with us at HeritageRadioNetwork.org to talk about a film that you are in the process of finishing called Under the Mango Tree. As far as I know, it is a film that you made after going to Ghana. First, you went with the school that you were involved with, NYU Food Studies Program, shout out. Mm-hmm. And you came across this medical clinic where you saw that they were feeding the homeless population and other mentally ill patients as well. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. So I was originally in Ghana with NYU. I graduated from the Steinhardt Food Studies Program, so I was there taking a class on hunger and food security in a global perspective. And part of this class was that we were touring around the country, looking at supply chains, food commodities like tomatoes and rice, corn, and seeing where those places along the supply chains we could. Essentially, the idea is to get more money for the farmer, make it more equitable across the supply chain. And as a result of going around to all of these different programs, we were going to NGOs and school feeding programs, and we also went to this clinic that is now the subject of my film, Under the Mango Tree. And I found that it was so inspiring and so special and empowering and important that it was the one thing out of all of the places we visited over the course of 3 weeks, that was the one thing I came back talking about to everybody. I just wanted to tell their story over and over and over again. So I ended up making a documentary about them for my final project at NYU.
So you ended up going back to Ghana because was it in your last day on the NYU trip that you actually discovered this clinic?
I think it was one of the last days.
Yeah. Yes. So you didn't go there like having an intention of actually making a documentary film or even knowing of this clinic. And I know that you were really interested in chocolate production when you first went, but you decided to go back on your own dime, on your own volition, or I know you had a Kickstarter campaign to help support you to mm-hmm. do that. But you were just so profoundly moved by this clinic and this doctor that you met, and that's what inspired you to make this film. So tell us a little bit about, like, where you are now. You did the initial Kickstarter campaign. You made this amazing trailer for your film. So bring us up to speed.
Right. So I was studying cocoa supply chains, which is why I was in why I wanted to be in Ghana. And I was looking at the chocolate industry and getting more money for farmers in the global south. And I completely redirected my course of my educational thesis because I went to this clinic and was so inspired by them. So I came back and I thought about, I was thinking of ways to get this story out. I mean, the doctor's story is incredible. The doctor who runs the clinic lost all 10 siblings and both parents to poverty-related diseases before he turned 10 years old. And he actually managed to put himself through high school and then make it all the way through medical school. He became a doctor. He quit his job in public health just to start this clinic in his hometown where he doesn't take any salary or anything for himself. He just completely does it out of kindness just to give back to his community.
How does he live, so Katrina?
He, his wife and his children, they take the food from the food program, actually. So that's how they are surviving. And they also are, the way that the clinic runs is on spontaneous donations. They don't ask for funding. They just, people like me who are traveling through NYU or through an NGO or whoever, go to this clinic and are inspired to give because of the absolute eloquence of this doctor. And his, he's a very humble, very eloquent, very genuine person. And it's hard not to want to give everything you possibly can to him when you meet him. They don't ask for funding. So that's typically how they survive, is they use what funding they need and leave the rest for the clinic.
So, Katrina, walk us through the food program. So the food program is feeding mentally ill people who are living on the streets of Uganda, or Ghana.
Of Ghana, yes. So in Ghana, mental illness is considered to be caused by witchcraft or by demons or evil spirits. There's a lot of superstition around it, and as a result, a lot of people who suffer from mental illness are kicked out of their homes at young ages and are left on the streets. There aren't a lot of services for this group of people. There are 12 psychiatrists, I think, in all of Ghana, and most of them are down in the southern part, and they're in the sort of northern area that doesn't have as many services. And what ends up happening a lot of the time to this group of people is they end up going to these things called prayer camps, which is a spiritual religious institution where they try to sort of beat the evil spirits out of them by, the Human Rights Watch put a report out not too long ago, a couple years ago, that reported that they were chained to trees and not given food or water for days on end. So there's a lot of mistreatment and misunderstanding of what mental illness is. But for the clinic, 20 years ago, to intentionally start to feed this group of people, it was a really big deal. The doctor saw that the mentally homeless tended to behave very wildly in the streets. They would steal food from the woman in the market. They would harass the woman in the market. They'd be very violent. There's a lot of public disturbance. And for the doctor to see that as and name it as hunger, because he knew hunger, because he grew up hungry on the streets of Tamale himself, and to say, okay, well, what we need to do is actually carry food to these people in the streets is quite a novel idea in this part of the world. And once they started to do this, they found that after this group of people would eat, they would then just sleep for the afternoon, and they wouldn't bother anybody. And it actually has created peace in the community between the women in the market and this population.
What are the meals like? What is the type of meal that, mm-hmm. that each person is given?
The meals are nutritionally balanced Ghanaian traditional food, mostly like the northern region has kind of a different food way or like way of or you know different ingredients, slightly different ingredients than the southern region. It's very the food that they offer is very specific to Tamale, the Tamale area. And you'll find things like fufu, which is this sort of pounded plantain and cassava, slimy, sticky ball of starch. And you pour ground nut soup on top of that, which is ground nuts are the Ghanaian word for a peanut. from, but they essentially make a peanut butter and mix it with Scotch bonnet peppers and tomatoes and puree it into a soup with water, and then some meat in there as well. So that's one example of a dish that you'll find, but it's different every day.
Has Dr. Abdullah had any kind of backlash? Because I imagine with a bad economy and totally sane people starving, do they, you know, find it hard to get sympathy within Ghana?
That's a good question. Sometimes I think it depends on who you're talking to. The community, of course, the recipients of this program were very happy to have it. The community is very happy to have it. The government absolutely is happy that he's there, but he's sort of a different type of program. He's not an NGO. He's not, you know, registered as anything. He's just, you know, he's just there. And I think that people have tried to get him to do things differently. He doesn't accept funding from certain sources if he thinks that they're going to make demands on how he runs his clinic. He's very protective of his patients and is very careful about where his pushback, but I think for the most part, people are very excited that he's there and doing the work that he's doing.
So how can listeners and how can we donate to your project to fund what you're continuing to do to edit the final film?
Yeah, so I'm in post-production right now. I went back last summer for 3 weeks to film. Me and a director of photography shot the film last year, and now we are trying to get funding to finish it. I need to hire an editor, sound designer, composer, pay for all the software, all that good stuff. So we're trying to raise $10,000 on Indiegogo, and we are almost halfway there with 16 days left. So get your funding in soon. And you can go to Indiegogo.com and type in Under the Mango Tree. That's probably the easiest way to get to us. And you can see the trailer there as well.
Are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter. I am at Mango Tree Film on Twitter.
That's great. And then we're going to also post the information on our Facebook page so people can listen to this interview and then know exactly how to go and contribute to your project.
Great. Thanks so much.
And Katrina, one last question. I want to know, where did the title come from?
Oh, that's a great question. The title Under the Mango Tree comes from the doctor's first surgery at the clinic location. So when the doctor moved from Accra, the main city in Ghana, to Tamale to start this clinic, the first surgery he performed before there were any buildings was under this huge mango tree that now provides food and shade and beauty to the clinic grounds. So the tree is still there with all these buildings surrounding it. And so to me, the meaning of the name Under the Mango Tree is about this natural way of feeding people and sort of the, you know, everything that's happening there and under the shade of this mango tree is very powerful.
That's beautiful, Katrina. Thank you so much. I'm definitely a supporter. I think your trailer is absolutely beautiful. I'm blown away by what you've done and just really excited
Thank
to
you.
Help you get the word out.
Yeah, and best of luck, Katrina.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Bye.
We're going to take a break here on The Morning After. We're going to come back with Sarah's stories about Europe.
You are listening to Long Live Music by Wood, Brass, and Steel Band.
We'll be right back.
we're back here on The Morning After. Paris, Berlin, Granada. I don't know. I don't know where you went in Spain. Bilbao.
I wanted to complete the song and be like, boring. But it wasn't. It totally wasn't, right?
No, totally not. No. So Aaron and I are going to interview Sari at this moment about her trip to Europe.
Hashtag again.
Hashtag fat foodie fantastic journey, the European edition, which means there's going to be an Asian edition.
Follow us on Twitter.
A North American edition, a Central American edition, a South American edition.
Antarctica edition.
Antarctican edition. Yeah,
I'm going to go
just
hard.
Just Sari and a penguin.
Yeah.
You'll eat an
what
ice.
What am I going to eat?
Just ice. These icicles are
delicious.
Nice smoothies
are delicious.
Fish. Fish again.
So.
Sushi.
So Sari, your first stop was in Paris, and I guess kind of the overarching question I want to know is, you know, what was the number one thing about food culture that you noticed in kind of each country?
Yeah, I mean, definitely how integrated food and drink is there. Like, no matter what you eat, it's really important what you drink. And that's kind of important to Americans, but it's just such a part of, like, the overall dining experience. Like, it's not a thoughtless thing, and it's not like, oh, I'll just have, like, a Red Bull vodka. It's, like, it's really, really important, and, you know, one of the things that's so different is there's no open container laws there. So the actual dining experience can extend beyond the restaurant, which was, like, sort of a mind-blowing thing for me to see. I went to this really cool restaurant in Paris called La Buvette. And when I got
is that
there,
related to Buvette in the West Village?
It's or not. It, okay. I thought it was the entire time.
There's another Buvette.
I know,
in
and
Paris
there's another Buvette, and I totally thought that that's where I was the entire time.
I mean, I would imagine it's like by example. You know, I would imagine that she kind of took that idea.
Yeah, I think La Buvette was there first. But it was really weird when I got there. There was like 13 people hanging out right outside the restaurant, like drinking like a whole bottle of wine and stuff, like right outside just on the sidewalk. And I was like, oh, that's weird, like, why couldn't they find a better spot to do that? And then I went to the restaurant and realized, like, they were part of people eating at the restaurant, and they were just going in, getting their drinks, and then, like, going back outside and drinking. And I was like, oh, that's brilliant, because there's really only four tables. So I was like, how do they make any money? But what actually was the reality is because they only had a couple tables, there was one table that had about five people sitting in, but that group of 13 was part of that table. So when people got hungry who were outside drinking, they just kind of come in and like tag or tap one of their friends and like switch it out, and they'd sit down and like eat a little bit and then go back outside and like keep drinking. And it was this like awesome thing that was going on all night long, and it was really fun.
It's like the WWF. It was like tag team dining.
Totally. Less violent. More mackerel. Less body slamming. Right.
I mean, when you got broken glass, when you got a, you know, you can smash a bottle and stab anybody. I mean, it could get violent whenever you want. That's why there's no open
Have
container laws
in New
York.
Have you watched WWF
right?
lately? No. They do not use broken glass. I'm
no, but they do use folding chairs.
So that's the difference between Europe and America. Is they don't smash bottles on each other.
So I guess what was the initial purpose of, because you went on a food studies
Yeah,
trip.
I went to Paris
what was the initial purpose?
Yeah, I went to Paris with my food studies department from NYU. And we were kind of looking to see like the way that Parisians really eat. Like, we really wanted to understand, like, the identity and then the performance of Parisians, which is the way that a lot of us in the food studies group thought about Parisians and the way they eat, which is like, oh, I go to the market fresh every day and buy my baguette and buy my perfect produce and then, you know, eat it every day. And there's nothing preserved. There's no preservative. So there's no shelf life. So they go and buy everything fresh. And it's like there's no processed food and everything is organic and everything is like from the cows down the road. And to sort of figure out like if that was how Parisians really eat or if that's how they make us think they eat or is that just what we think.
I've been to so many roadside like gas station French convenience stores. I'm gonna say right away that is not how they eat.
No, I know, and that's like the myth that got debunked. And we went to a bunch of grocery stores. We went to like the huge food plant, like, you know how we have Hunts Point in New York, like where all the food comes through, like this huge kind
like
of
like the port.
Yeah, like the port, exactly. We went to the French version of that where like all the food comes through and then from there they sell to all the restaurants. So we got to do this like cool behind the scenes tour and see that like no matter what restaurant it is, they're kind of all buying from the same place, you know, like even the really, really expensive ones and then like, you know, the bistros are all kind of getting their meat from the same place.
Really?
Yeah.
All the meat from the same place. So
yeah, I mean, there's different cuts. Like, there's different kinds of meat, but it all comes through like the same port, like this huge
market. Where is that meat originating from then?
They have different buyers that they buy from. Yeah. And we have the same thing in New York. You know, it's
of course.
It's called Hunts Point, and it feeds like the entire eastern seaboard. So,
right.
Yeah, it's really the exact same model.
So what was one of the debunked myth moments that you had when you were in Paris?
I mean, definitely going to like the grocery stores and seeing that they have the same food, except that their chip flavors are far superior.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can speak on that too.
Yeah.
I had hamburger flavor chips.
I had pesto. Yeah.
We had oyster
flavored chips.
Yep.
I am so mad that I didn't see that.
We had lamb kebab.
Oh my flavored God.
Chips. I'm going to say oyster flavored chips. No.
No?
No.
It was two of my favorite things combined.
It was like really briny.
Oh, that sounds good.
I've also had a garlic mayo flavored chip. Not so good.
I'm a big fan of the pickle chip.
The hamburger was good. Exactly, because you got the ketchup plus pickle flavor.
Yeah. The pesto ones that I had were part of like the, even though they were Lay's, they were part of like the Italian bruschetta series.
I love that in Europe, Lay's has an Italian bruschetta series.
They do.
So you gotta keep it clear though. Like even as we're talking about them eating crap, it's still kind of
it's
better.
Crap.
No, this is better crap.
These are like haute cuisine chips.
Haute cuisine. Exactly.
Yeah, it's like the same chip, but it's like the artisanal variety.
What's the beverage pairing with that?
It's a Chenin Blanc.
Chenin Blanc. Some Muscadet.
I just want some. Just beer. Cold.
Yeah. And they have frozen food.
Iced, cold.
They have
just
all the same
cold.
Things. They have a store called Picard that only sells frozen food. But it looked like better frozen food. Like it's like the Trader Joe's brand, but it was like Picard, like their own brand. And it was nothing but frozen food. But it like, I wanted to eat it, but I didn't have a
microwave.
So
there was like no Hungry Man or like kids TV dinner, like,
it looked
good.
Gooey
brownie that like, you know, gets totally dried out in the microwave and then it like oozes into the corn.
I was just thinking about that. This could be ignorance, and I have been to many homes in France, but I've never seen a microwave. So
well, that's
do you
what
think
so
that these are all cooked in the oven?
I don't know.
Or do you think they're microwavable?
I think they're microwavable. And I don't know for sure because I
don't
wasn't, like,
think they're above microwaves.
No, I don't. I mean, I didn't.
I just haven't seen one.
That's the thing. Like, I guess the like shock was that there's a store. It's a chain. It's all over that only sells frozen food. So what? Like they have microwaves, they eat frozen food to begin with. So that was really surprising, but at the same time it was like it still looked like better quality frozen food.
So then from Paris, you went to Normandy.
We went to Normandy the end of days.
End of days, not as in like things are ending, but
well the trip was ending. Yeah, that was really cool. We did camembert tasting, we got to see some Calvados production, drank some cider. You know, all that good stuff you do.
Talked about D-Day.
Yep, we did. We went to the Omaha Beach, the U.S. Museum. Yeah, that was actually really interesting. It was really meaningful.
Actually really interesting. One of the most important moments
well, it wasn't
of
about
World
food.
War II.
It wasn't about food,
was
so we were like,
definitely not about food.
Like, what did they eat on D-Day?
Oh my God. Nothing.
Probably nothing.
Nothing.
No. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess like the only kind of disappointing thing about Normandy is we were in really touristy areas where, you know, the food was kind of crappy.
So then that brings up the best moment of this interview. I've been dying to ask this question so far. Let's go for it, Liz. What's on the menu with Chardonnay? We were so lucky to get Sade to sing that jingle
so
for
convenient.
Us.
Convenient. She was having brunch at Roberta's.
So Chardonnay is our mythical restaurant that celebrates all bad food and wine trends. Sari, what was the Chardonnays of Europe?
Yeah, it was Normandy. I mean, probably there's really good places to eat there, but we were only
I'm
in the
sure
tour sections. We went and saw this beautiful like abbey castle palace thing called Mont Saint-Michel, and the whole bottom floor of this like gorgeous preserved castle thing is like the Disney World of France. It's like nothing but souvenir shops and like
except for the actual Disney World that's
oh
in
yeah yeah
so confusing
so
still.
Confusing
I'm so confused
yeah
it's been since the 90s confused
anyway. So it's like all places that sold like typical French food like crepes and I don't know whatever French people like to eat
frites
yeah all that is. So we were really hungry, so we ate there and the food was awful. I got a fish soup and it had no fish in it. It just tasted kind of weird and salty.
It was like the chips.
And we decided to get pasta, which was probably a bad idea in the first place. But yeah, it had no seasoning. It was horrible. Yeah. And the crepes were really sad.
Oh, the crepe. I was just going to say, like, when in doubt, get a crepe. But...
Yeah, yeah. They were really sad. Yeah.
They were crap crepes. So from France, you went to Germany.
I did. I went to Berlin for a week, which is like a totally different kind of thing. Mostly because my ear rejects all German, so I couldn't speak any of their language. And I was like kind of concerned because I don't eat meat, and I thought it was going to be like a sausage fest.
Do you know what the difference is between jelly and jam?
Stop. Yeah, but it actually was like a vegan paradise, which was kind of shocking because I didn't know that Germans like loved their tofu that much. I ate vegan currywurst. Yep, I did. I know. Jesse's making a really yucky face.
Silent,
you know, the thing about currywurst is it's just sausages covered in ketchup with curry powder. So you can probably cover anything in ketchup with curry powder and it'll taste the same. That was my takeaway from that.
I mean, at the end of the day, a sausage is just like a whole bunch of things blended together.
Yeah,
so, and so is a curry.
Like, yeah,
why
exactly.
Does it actually have to be meat?
It's true. And currywurst is just a vehicle for ketchup.
Yeah, and curry is not like a set thing.
It's yeah,
a combination it's just, of a variety
it's
of different
spices. It's super popular, like this particular cuisine or item. It's just sausage covered in ketchup and like doused in a ton of curry powder, and it's everywhere. It's so popular.
Did you eat any white asparagus?
Yeah,
I know that's like a big thing in Germany. I guess it's probably more like springtime.
Yeah,
thing, but
yeah, it was good. It kind of tastes pickled. I mean, maybe it was pickled. I don't know. Yeah, it's good. I like the real stuff better.
I mean, I can't speak on that because I wasn't.
Yeah, I mostly just ate South Asian food because it's everywhere. It's really weird. It's like it's Berlin, but like all the restaurants, well, not all of them, but the majority, it felt like were Thai or Vietnamese or from some part of that world.
Did it feel like that was like the movement that's going on there right now?
I think
or
that's
those
always been
established?
There. Yeah, that has to do with like immigration and history and wars, stuff like that.
So then from Berlin, you went to Spain.
I did. Yeah, I started in Bilbao, went to San Sebastian. On the way from Bilbao to San Sebastian, I ate at this amazing restaurant called Estibari, which is kind of in the middle of nowhere in Spain, to be specific, and had a four-hour lunch, probably the most epic meal of my life.
Followed by a four-hour nap. Yeah,
exactly.
True.
Siesta. Little siesta.
In the car. Yes. We had to sleep that off in order to drive without killing other people, including ourselves. Went to San Sebastian and then went to Madrid.
Amazing. So what did you take back from dining in Spain?
They like mayonnaise.
They like mayonnaise?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's called aioli.
I think it's called mayonnaise.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Everything. Well, pinchos are the big thing to eat in Bilbao in Spain, and they're kind of like their Basque version of tapas. They're a little bit smaller, and everything's pretty much on bread and doused in mayonnaise. Which was a little intense for me because I've like historically had a fear of mayonnaise, so I really had to confront that. I really had to like full on accept it. It was kind of awkward at times.
How did you handle the like the food sitting out kind of situation? Because I know it's like
yeah exactly. You go into like any Pinchos bar / restaurant, and the whole countertops are just filled with food, and they're like little sandwiches and we would call them crostinis. And they're there for the taking, and you just, like, pick what you want and kind of compose your meal that way. But, I realized when I first went into one of these places and saw all this food, I was like, oh, those must be, like, the models. Like, this is the representative of the food they're actually going to give me.
Like the restaurant on Spring Street and
exactly.
Broadway where they've got, like, the table out with the checkered, you know, the
I thought it was like that. Yeah.
Spaghetti.
I was like, oh, okay, this is, like, an idea of the food that they're going to give me, which they have stored, like, in a fridge somewhere or something, or they're going to make from scratch. But no, they just pull it right off and put it on your plate, and that's what you eat. And I was kind of blown away because obviously, like, we have the Department of Health, and you can't let food sit out all day long. And...
Unless it's under a sneeze guard in a deli.
Yep, no sneeze guards. Nope, not that. So, you know, there was a moment of, like, slight panic, and I just had to be like, cool, this is how they do it. And it tastes amazing. It's delicious. It's, like, the best food ever. So you kind of just have to accept the cultural difference and hope that you won't die from pinchos because it's been sitting out all day. I almost died because I ate so much of it, but I certainly didn't have any health problems due to health.
So I want to know we're talking about everything they're doing right, but what are they doing wrong, Sari? What are they doing wrong in the Europe dining scene? What is wrong? There has to be something wrong, because last time I went, I was like, why aren't we like
I know, this? Why are we? I don't
cheese
know.
Cheese is out at temperature. Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, they seem to be doing everything right. Like, I think it's hard for Americans to come in and quite, like, figure it out, because we just go there and, like, eat so much. And that, I guess, like, for me, I just felt kind of sick the entire time, because I was constantly eating. And it's just hard, especially, like...
That sounds horrible. Like, my trip was great. I was actually gravely ill for the entire time.
I wasn't gravely ill. It was just like, must eat more pinchos. I guess just trying to figure out the balance as an American coming into it. I mean, they seem to have it figured out really well. I mean, for me, it was like impossible to eat that much cheese and bread and like feel okay about myself.
I think they take a lot of smoke breaks.
Maybe.
I hear that moves things through.
Yeah, they probably just eat less. I think like we just ate everything. So I think it's more of, like, it's our problem, not theirs. I would have liked to see a little bit more, like, salad or dark greens. But that's just not really a thing there, you know? I miss kale.
They missed the kale bones.
I miss kale. I'm not going to lie.
Where's the crudité? Come on.
Not in my mouth.
I've always pronounced that crudites.
Crudites?
Yeah.
I'll have some crudites, please.
There's vegetables, dressing. But the vegetables are, like, cooked and cooked in butter, and they taste amazing. You know, every now and then I would have taken some kale.
All right, yeah, get us a salad.
Yeah,
well, you're back in New York.
Yep,
with plenty of salads.
Yeah, I know, it's great,
but I'm happy you're back here. It's good to see you across from me.
You too. Totally.
Aaron, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thanks for trusting me to be on the mic again.
And shut her mic off.
I can tell the joke again.
Nope.
So please be sure to check out Katrina Moore's film and the trailer of it, Under the Mango Tree, on Indiegogo.com. Just search the name Under the Mango Tree. Also, we here at Heritage Radio Network are a nonprofit organization, and we need support from listeners like you. So if you donate by today, your contribution will be doubled. Doubled.
That means
that's
matched.
Pretty freaking serious. That's yep. Matched. Like, you don't have to spend that much because somebody else is going to spend more for you.
Ooh, and you can win prizes.
You can win prizes.
Like, really good prizes.
So check out the website, heritageradionetwork.org.
Yep.
Find the donate button, and please donate so Sari and I can keep having fun on Sunday afternoons.
You'd miss us.
Totally.
You would.
This has been The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.